We were on the bottom of Daf Nun Dalet Amid Aleph. And I think that we had just read Kvar Tirgum Arahunach L'Shmaitich B'Bavel, I think. In other words, the conclusion that we arrived at was that if you do a Maisa to the object, then it can become a nevad even though it's not your object. And it might very well even be. In other words, the Gemara started out by saying that nevad's only us or if it's yours. If I bow down to Marshall's behemoth, so, you have any animals? Marshall, any pets in the house? No. Okay, if Marshall had a cat, okay. Abigail had a cat, and if I bow down to that cat, so the cat, well, okay, the cat can't be brought on the Mizbeach anymore. Let's say he had a sheep, okay? And I bow down to the sheep is still good as a carbon. Now, if, however, the Gemara said, if I were to pour wine, libate on the sheep, you know, between its horns, and worshipping the sheep, so that would be considered at least a nevad, that it would be usher to bring that animal as a carbon. It might even be that once you do a maisa to something like that, it might be that it's usher even lehedyot. Right? That's a whole discussion. And it's certainly true in the last case that the Gemara quotes, when Rav Nachman says to Ula, that, by the way, you know, Rav Huna already explained this, what you're saying. Notice, Ula's chiddush was, if you do a maisa to something, even though it's not yours, you can make it into a ne'avad and it become no good as a carbon.
What's the mechanism there? Is it because it becomes his life? What's the...
So let's talk about Rav Huna's case, because Rav Huna's case is a little bit clearer. Rav Huna's case is where you shech the animal, once you shecht even one simen, and as Tosa says, it doesn't matter how much you shech. Once you cut even a little bit of the animal, so that animal is usser. You did it l'shem v'duzara. So there, Sam, obviously what's going on is this kind of a shinui kona, right? It's a shinui kona, and therefore it's not my object, and it's not clear whether it's my object fully, but just as making a change in an object, when you steal it, makes it yours, right? If I steal your wheat, and I grind it up and I make it flour, so that flour now belongs to me. I have title to that, right? Why? Because I have what's called a kinyan gazela, which doesn't make it mine. But when I steal an object, I acquire it partially. What does it mean to acquire it partially? I don't have title to it, so I can't sell it. If I legally sell it, it may not be sold. If I makdish it, the hekdesh doesn't work because you can't be makdish something that isn't yours. But it's mine that if something happens to it, I'm liable. So if I steal your car, it's your driveway, and I live right next to you, and I park it in my driveway, and then there's a massive flood that wipes out everything on both of our driveways. So it would have wiped out your car no matter what, whether I had stolen it or not. I'm still liable. Why? Because I was kona the car to be chayiv in it for anything that happens to it until I return it. So here it's not clear the person is stealing it, but if, let's say, I take your car and I change it. I retool it. I stick a new engine in it. I do all sorts of things to it. You know, I make a shinui. A shinui that's not easily undoable. I make a change, then the object becomes mine. Why? Because it's no longer your object. Why? Because it's not the same object, right? I stole one thing. That thing doesn't exist anymore. It's a new object here. It belongs to me completely. I can do anything that I want with it. So there is an idea that shinui can, combined with, in this case, with an act of theft, with a kinyan gezela, shinui can make something fully mine. In the same way, here it's not clear that he's stealing it. If I shecht somebody's animal for avodah zara, so the halacha is that in this case I can make it aser because I did a maisa to the animal, I changed it. And in that case, in the case that the Gemara quoted from Rav Huna, that hoisa behema chaver, three lines from the bottom, ravutza b'fnei avodas kochavim, kevan sheshachat pasimen echar asara. As soon as you shecht one simen, as I said, Tosa says even less than a simen, it becomes aser. Why? Because you made a shinui in the animal, right? Even without the intent to acquire it. It becomes usser as tikrov as avodah zara, because I can't make your animal a nevad simply by bowing to it, but I can if I make a shinui. Now, the suggestions of Ula, which the Gemara doesn't really make a distinction between this and Rav Huna's case, Ula is a case where you didn't necessarily, well, at least the way Rashi and Tosa say, you didn't change the animal. You didn't do, in other words, you didn't transform the animal, but you did. It's not like if I bow to the animal, I didn't actually do anything to the animal, right? There's no connection between me and the animal. Whereas if I pour wine between the animal's horns, I've actually done something to the animal. One Rishon, at least, the Ritva claims, it's not enough to pour the wine between the horns. You actually have to do something there. You have to, like, make a little change to the animal, maybe scratch away some of the horns or something like that, and then you pour the wine there, so there's something that constitutes a change in the animal itself. But the other Rishon don't mention that. It's enough that I did something, not simply I bowed to the animal that was there, but I actually did something to the body of the animal, even if it's not a change or a permanent thing. So that's enough to constitute a nevad.
Does it make a difference if it's on the if the animal is on the premises of the original owner?
Shouldn't matter.
How about the ayin nesach? If you're picking up the ayin nesach on the premises of the owner.
So that's not relevant for the ayin nesach. That's relevant for the gzeila question. I think we did mention this.
Okay.
Yeah. In other words, the question of kamlei b'derabim yinei, that you don't get two punishments if you incur two different kinds of punishment at the same very precise moment simultaneously. Mm-hmm. Namely, I burn down your house on Shabbos, so I'm potter from paying for your house because I'm chayiv misa for Shabbos. So if I pour your yayin and I make it into yayin nesech, so number one, I violated avodah zara. Number two, I damaged your wine. So the assumption there is that if I did it at the same time, I would be putter for paying for the damages to the wine. If you are even liable for those damages, the damages are not recognizable. It's what we call hezek she'eino nikar. The wine looks like just like it did before. But assuming that you're chayiv for that, so the Gemara then raises the discussion. But why don't we say that first I pick up the wine, I'm koneh, and only later, that's my act of gesel, and only when I then pour it, do I actually violate the avodah zara, and the liability incurring of damages and the incurring of the death penalty don't come at the same time? But that would not affect. That's not a question of whether the yayin is yayin nesach. It's yayin nesach either way. It doesn't matter whether you come.
If the guy sticks his
hand into your wine barrel and just shakes his hand around, he's meshach sheikh, he also makes it yayin nesach, right? So it does not require any kenyan, right?
What happens if again there's a time element there? One is done, you know. Do you have both, you know, accumulated rabbin, but do you have both if, let's say, on Monday you did this, something else? Like,
no, it has to be one act. It's more determined by the act, probably. Well, maybe not clear. Let's not go there. If you want, you can look in the Gemara Ksubis in the third parak when you shoot an arrow on Shabbos and it tears somebody's silks on the way before it lands in the other Rishus. But let's leave that aside. But bottom line is, for the purposes of a Yayin Nesach, it doesn't matter whether it's yours or not. It really matters what you do to the object. I have a suspicion, although I don't remember anything Mishon saying explicitly, that some would argue if you pour wine between the horns of the animal but you didn't change the animal, it would be Nevad for Gavoa but not for Hedyot. In other words, a Hedyot could still get hana'ah from it. But it is definitely clear that when you shech the animal, that is not only, obviously you can't bring it as a carbon anymore, it's a little bit too late. You already shech the one simon, but on top of that, that type of an action in the animal makes it prohibited even to the owner. Not just you can't bring it as a carbon anymore. Okay. So now, the Gemara on the bottom, second to bottom line, in the Gemara. Oh, by the way, I forgot something. Actually, Tosa says what I said explicitly. So it wasn't my idea. The problem in the Tosa says that pouring the wine between the animal's horns makes it a nevad lagavoa. Shechting the animal is clear from the Gemara, makes it prohibited even to the private individual. The question that Tosis is dealing with, and he doesn't really answer it, is how does the Gemara bring a raya from one to the other? How does it connect the two? They're two fundamentally different things. And he basically engages in what I call apples and oranges math. In other words, in the same way that a action in the animal, to the animal, that doesn't change it, makes it usur lehedyot, so too, a change in the animal, makes it usur lagavoa, a change in the animal, real physical change, makes it usur even lahedyot. Okay, it's not, in other words, they're not exactly analogous, but that's the kind of, I call fuzzy arithmetic that Tosa suggests. Okay. So now the Gemara wants to know, on the second line from the bottom, minolan da'asara. So how do you know that it's possible to make someone else's stuff usur? How do you know it's possible to make something, someone else's stuff usur as a nevad? Whether it's lagavoa, only as a carbon, or even for private usage. How do you know that, right? Now, there's these amoraim have asserted it. That if you do a maisa, you do an action to the animal, you change the animal, even though it's not yours, even though you didn't steal it, It's not yours. Nonetheless, it changes the status of the animal. It makes it a ne'evad. So the question is, but how do you know that? We generally have a principle, ein adam oser davar she'enu shelo. You cannot make something oser if it's not yours. You cannot give something away if it's not yours. You're not makdish something. You can't be makdish something that's not yours. And that we have a pasuk for. We have an idea. The Torah says in Parshas Bechukosai, v'ish ki akdish es beiso kodesh. If a person consecrates his house, beiso, as kodesh, so the Gemara says, ma beiso bershuso, and really shelo ubershuso, just as his house is both his and it's in his possession, because your landed properties, wherever they are in your possession, afko bershuso. If you want to consecrate something, it has to be shelcha, and it has to be bershuscha. It has to be yours and under your control. So the question is, how can I make someone else's... In effect, when I make something asar banal of odazara, it's almost like, it's not hektesh, but I am changing its consecrated status. How can I do that, if normally you can only affect change in your own possessions? So...
What's the idea of zochin la'adam?
What's that?
Zochin la'adam.
Well, it's not as a chus here.
Yeah, I know that. No, I'm saying...
Right.
No, how about for hektesh?
Okay. You can't... What do you mean? What do you think of?
Someone else's...
Nobody would say that. It's not as chus. It's not an objective chus. They no longer have possession of it. Right. In order to zochen is a very, very limited principle. Right. It has to be what we would call an objective zchus that everybody, without asking, everybody would want you to do it. I find a diamond ring. I want to give it a present to Lenny. I pick it up, presumably. Everybody, you know, unless if you remember, I don't know if I date myself or I date some of you, but some of you may remember there's a movie called Brewster's Millions. So if you remember that movie, so then maybe picking up the diamond ring for Lenny, if he were the heir, would not be as a chus. It would push him over the threshold. But normally speaking, if I see a diamond and I pick it up for someone, presumably they would want to be koneh, right? So, but it has to be something that you could assume. And by the way, he still has the right of refusal. Even in zachen, Lenny could turn and say, "But I don't want it," for whatever his reasons. But in order for zachen to even work, it has to be objectively as a chus, and then there's a right of refusal. So that would not be relevant here. Okay, so the Gemara says, "Minolan dasara." How do you know? So ilima mikohanim. So what's the kohanim? So Rashi writes, "Sha'anosum malcha Yisrael lasos komar avodas kochavim uksev lo yigshu elai lechahen li." So now the pasuk he's quoting from Sefer Yecheskel, which we've already sort of encountered indirectly, is that a kohen who has worshipped avodah zarah, who has ministered to avodah zarah, cannot serve in the temple anymore. He's disqualified. Now, the assumption Rashi is making about that pasuk in Yecheskel is that Yecheskel was speaking about not only kohanim who willingly ministered to avodah zarah, but that there were kohanim who had been forced to do so by the evil kings of the northern kingdom. Right? Yeravam set up his golden calves, and he established priests. Now, I would have thought, reading the Tanakh, that these were people who were more than willing to do it. There was no shortage of individuals who were willing to serve as Yeravam's priests. But Rashi says the Gemara's assumption here is that there were people there who were forced to worship Avodah Zarah, and that's to minister for Avodah Zarah. And the Gemara's attempted proof then, it's about to reject it, is that these people were, this is like Nenas by Nevat. Right? In other words, if I do something to your object, assuming it's against your will, I didn't ask you to do it, you didn't ask me to do it, so that's onus. So if a Kohen who ministers to the Avodah Zarah becomes osur to minister in the temple because, even though he was onus in doing so, so by analogy, it's not exactly the same thing the Gemara is suggesting, if I, against your will, use your animal in some sacrificial way, in some ritual way, let's put it that way, so it also becomes osur, just like the Kohen becomes osur. So the Gemara says no. Vildilma shani kohanim debinei deyaninhu. Okay, so we've seen a bit of this back and forth, this shaka vitaria. We saw it in the earlier sugya, and we're going to see a few more pieces, right? We encountered this by the last Mishnah in Menachos, the last Mishnah, that kohanim sheshimshu bebeis chonyo, so lo yashamshu bamikdash. If a kohen served in the temple of Onias, which is the debate in the Gemara, was it an idolatrous temple, or was it a monotheistic temple, but it was shkutei chutz, it was bringing karbanos outside of the mikdash, so they're not allowed to serve in the temple. So in that discussion, that's where we saw this idea, that maybe the kohanim were punished because they were b'nei Dayaninhu. In other words, they knew what they were doing. The kohen who worshipped, who ministered for Avodah Zarah, Sarah, for Yeravim, and for the other Israelite kings, the northern kings. So they knew what they were doing. Maybe they did it under duress, but they knew what they were doing, and therefore they were prohibited from serving in the Beis HaMikdash. Okay, but maybe an animal, certainly an animal doesn't consent, an animal doesn't do anything, an animal is not a bar das in the typical sense. So how do you know that if someone worships my animal or one of my other objects that's not even animate, how do I know that that can become usur as a nevad if they do something to it? How do you know that? So the Gemara says, ve'ela me'avne mizbeach. Right, the Greeks came in, and we saw this already. The Greeks came into the temple. They maybe brought they brought animals on the mizbeach. There were stones there, and we learned earlier that when the Hashmonaim took over, they took the mizbeach apart and they put the stones in Geniza. They were gonez the stones. So the question is, why were the pagans, the Hellenistic pagans, able to make the mizbeach asur if it doesn't belong to them? And remember that the Mizbeach is even more so, it's attached to the Karka. So it's not even clear, you know, it's not even like they could have made a kinyan on the Mizbeach or something like that to make it theirs, but rather, how is it that they could make something also that didn't belong to them? So the Gemara says no. And since they could, by analogy, just as by their doing an action on the Mizbeach, they brought an animal, they sacrificed stuff on the Mizbeach, even though it wasn't theirs, it made the Mizbeach a nevad for Avodah Zarah, and therefore not usable, so too, by our case. So the Gemara says, V'dilma k'dirah papa. Ah, but Rav Papa there had a very important idea, that ubobo pritzim v'chilaluha, that when the temple, that there's a special, normally we assume that something that has kedushas haguf, an animal that's suitable to be brought and been consecrated as a carbon, or klei shares, which probably the mizbeach would qualify as. There's no. Let me just step back, Brian, for 1 second. If this watch belongs to Hekdesh, and I take it and I do something to it, I get benefit from it, I steal it, I violate me'ilah. But through my hana'ah, through my benefit, this watch becomes chulin. It loses its consecrated status. Right? Whenever you do me'ilah, especially b'shogeg, unintentionally, the object is yotzei l'chulin. It becomes desecrated, in effect. It becomes chulin, and I have to pay, and I have to bring a carbon, and so on. Now, there are only two things that's not true by, and that is a behemah tamim, an animal which has no mum, and was consecrated for it to be a carbon, and klei shares. Those two things have kedushas haguf, and you can, even though I violate me'ilah, if I get benefit from it and I have to pay for that and I have to bring a karbon, it doesn't serve as pidyon. That's what me'ilah acts as in a weird way, as a pidyon, as a redemption. Therefore, me'ilah only has that effect on things that you can redeem. You cannot go to the gizbar and say, here's $1 million, I want to redeem this animal, right? Which is suitable for a karbon now, which this kid doesn't work. Right? Kedushas haguf doesn't disappear from the animal. It's nothing that can essentially dissolve it, or nothing that we know until now. Only kedushas damim, when something is consecrated, but it's only worth to hekdesh, is fundamentally its monetary value. Kedushas damim you can redeem, and me'ilah desecrates it, redeems it in effect, and you have to pay the penalties. So that's what we would have said. The mizbeach is not subject to me'ilah, except there's a gzeiras hakasav. The gzeiras hakasav from Yechezkel is uva'uba peritzin v'chilaluha. The perutzim, I don't know how you would translate that here, are going to enter the temple and they're going to desecrate it. And v'chilaluha is the same language as chulin, and therefore the understanding is that when the pagans desecrated the mizbeach, a Jew who had desecrated the mizbeach, it would have been remained with its kedusha. But a guy, an invading power, if it's a guy, an invading power, when they enter, they actually dissolve the kedusha of the things that are involved. And therefore, maybe the reason why it became Osir Bahana, the Mizbeach, is because when they desecrated it, it was Yotzei Lechulin, it became theirs, and they could serve, they could worship it, they worshipped on it, and that's why they had to put away, they had to put the Mizbeach stones in Geniza. But we still don't have a case, we still don't have a source where, you know, either a pasuk or a Tanaitic source that you can make someone else's object usur as a nevad if you do something to it. So now the Gemara says, ve'ela mikalim. Now we're going to talk about the vessels. We saw this also, that the Jews desecrated in the time of Ahaz, right? When Ahaz wanted to mimic the king of Assyria. And he pushed aside the Mizbeach, and he built the Mizbeach just like the one that had been in Damascus. And they used the Kalim inappropriately for Avodah Zarah. So what happened to those Kalim? So we discussed that earlier. There were two versions. That was the Pasuk that Rebbe forgot. Rebbe forgot that Pasuk. Someone quoted in the Pasuk with a different interpretation. He said, thank you for returning my lost object. I want to use that Pasuk, but opposite of what you said. And this is what we said earlier. Dichsiv. Ve'es on top of Nundal and Medbeis. Ve'es kol ha-kelim asher hizniach ha-melech achaz b'malchuso b'ma'alo he'chanu v'hiktashnu. All of the vessels that Ahaz, the king Ahaz, Chizkiyahu's father, in his kingship had cast aside, in his dealing treacherously with God, we prepared and we sanctified. V'amar mar, what does that mean? Heichanu means we prepared them. Sheginaznum, we actually put them in Geniza. V'hikdashnu is, we consecrated. Shekdashnu acherim tachtem, we made new kalim. So v'ha ein adam oser dava she'eno shelo. How could Ahaz and his people have astered the Hekdesh, these clay shares, right, which are not Yotzei Lechulin, and because they're not an invading power of non-Jews, they don't have the power of like the Greek pagans did. So how then could they make these Kalim Aser just because they use them to minister to Avodah Zarah? So obviously, you see that when you do a Maisa with something, you see that Lakevan da Avid Behu Maisa Itzerula Hu. They became also once you didn't. You didn't stand opposite the kalim and bow to them. You actually took the kalim. You used them for ministering. That's a maisa, and therefore they became ne'avad. They became aser. Hachanami, so too in our case, by somebody's behema, if you pour the wine, let's say between its horns, kevan she'asa b'maisa asara.
But that's not lahedjo.
So I think I think with the case of the Kalim is an interesting case. My assumption with the Kalim is, technically speaking, it might have been possible to make them Mutter Lehedyot. It would have required, it's a little complicated, but theoretically, if not for bad appearances, maybe it would have been Mutter Lehedyot. It's not, you know, there's what to discuss there. But certainly Lagavoa. Right. In other words, bridging that gap, what Tosa struggled with, is not entirely clear. Certainly Tosa says the behema, when you only pour the wine between the horns, the animal's mutter lahedjo, it's only aser lagavoa. Marshall, you had a question.
Who actually owns the clay sharet? Like, is there an argument that actually the king has dominion over them?
No, I think that we would say the clay sharets are owned by God. You would say hektesh. In other words, not for now. There is a notion in halacha. There is a notion of a corporation. It may be a very limited notion. It may not be one that you can necessarily create. But hekdesh does seem to have the qualities of sort of an independent corporation, and it being exempt from, you know, halacha is sort of like Supreme Court decision, which is corporations are people, except for hektesh, right? In other words, we may not a bunch of us get together, make a corporation. Halacha may not really truly recognize it. So we, for example, we can't lend with interest from our corporation because we're individuals. It's just it's a shutfus. But hektesh seems to be different. So I would say Hekdesh Inc. is the owner of these kalim.
Who owns a shul?
Separate discussion.
It's communal property.
Separate discussion. The question is, who is the community? Who is the community? What's that?
The Kohen.
Is that you? Your
as we would say, as Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai said, after the Kohanim claimed they were not allowed, the Kohanim said that Kol Kohen Shokel Eino Chote. Any Kohen who volunteers is not a Machzeh Shekel. Is not a sinner. But the Kohanim argue that really, Kohanim are not supposed to give Machzis HaShekel. Because since the Kohanim, if you give a Machzis HaShekel, by the way, Marshall, you'll appreciate this, it actually comes back to your thing of Hekdesh. If you give a Machzis HaShekel, then if you have partial ownership of the Karban, and the Karban HaOmer and the Shtei HaLechem were brought with the money of the Tzibur, with the Machzis HaShekel, and a Kohen who brings the Karban Mincha, it gets burned totally. Next week's parasha will read that. V'chol minchas kohen kol et yelo sechel. If I, Yisrael, bring a mincha, the kohanim eat after the kamitza is taken off, they eat the rest of it. But a kohen brings a mincha, the entire thing is burned on the mizbeah. So they said, how can the kohanim eat the omer and shtei alechem if kohanim have a portion in it? And Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai responded and said, kohanim dorshim mikra zela atzman. The Kohanim interpret scripture for their own benefit. Ela kol kohen she'eino shokel is chote. Any kohen who doesn't give the machzah shekel is a sinner. And the explanation is that hekdesh is corporate ownership. When I give my machzah shekel, it's not that I own one millionth of the karban. It's a corporate entity. Once the shekel machzah shekel is given over, and therefore you can eat the omer neshtei lechem. So okay. So I don't know who the corporate ownership of the shul is, but it's probably not just the Kohanim. All right.
Don't fix.
Fine. So now the Gemara wants to deal with a couple of other possibilities of things that become usur b'hana, things that we thought until now were not possible. So if you remember, one of the things that is not usur b'hana is karka olam. Karka olam is not usur b'hana, right? That was really how we started this all back in the third perek, right? Goyim ha'ovdim es ha'harim, so the harim are mutarim, ha'shaleh might be asur, might be machlokus, whatever it is. So now...
This is different than Esther's karko.
Yeah. Yes, correct. Correct, that is correct. Very good. You know, it's funny. Yeah, there is, you know... But the Gemara, it's interesting because the Gemara didn't strike. The Gemara never, that was Tosis's invocation, the Gemara never invoked Karkol and Manam Alf. But yes, good. So now the Gemara says as follows, Ki asa ravdimi amur rabbi Yochanan, apa pisha amur hamishtacha vele karka olam lo asara. Even though we say that if you bow to karka olam, it doesn't become asar bana, because karka olam ain't a neseres. And presumably the reason it's not neseres in a weird way is that it's not yours. But when we say not yours, if I go into my backyard in Teaneck, New Jersey, and I bow down to the karka, it's also not usur. In other words, it's not, ownership is not there enough. You need there what we saw, tfisas yada adam. You need sort of human shlita over the, human beings have to have shaped and modified in some way the stuff. However, chafar baboro shichen uma aros asara. If you dig in the ground, L'shem avodizara, Rashi says, you dig in pits and cisterns and caves. Right? These are all water collection holes in the ground. Yeah, so it makes it asur. Why? Because this has tefisas yad ha'adam. Right now, what's interesting here, and I don't want to beat this to death. Some of the Rifa talks about this. It's kind of interesting. Rashi says that when you dig the bore, it has to be l'shem avodizara. But the truth is, if you plant a tree. If a person plants a tree, certainly one shita earlier assumed that if a human being planted the tree, it wasn't there on its own, that is called tfisas yad ha'adam, and you don't have to plant the tree in order to worship it. If you plant the tree and then you worship it, the tree is nesar because it had tfisas yad ha'adam. So the question is here, why do you have to dig the pit? L'shem avodizara. It should be enough that if you dug a pit, if you pulled your took your backhoe in and you did a little bit of landscaping, now that should be called tfisas yad ha'adam, and now if you bow to it, it should be asur. So the answer probably is, and the Ritva says something like this, is that there is a difference between planting a tree and digging in the ground. In other words, digging in the ground is, you are reshaping the earth, but what's left behind there fundamentally is still karka olam. And you might even say, you didn't really exercise shlita. You know, there are two things that you, there are three things that you could look at becoming usur when you dig boro shichan maros. Number one is the bottom of the pit that you dug. Number two is the airspace of the pit. And number three is the dirt that you took out. So everybody is going to agree that the dirt that you took out is now talush min hakarka. It's something that's detached from the ground, and that will become usur. What's more interesting is both the airspace, whether that can really become usur, because it's nothing there. Right, it isn't anything, or the karka underneath it. Can I now go to the karka and this pit that I dug, l'shem avodizara, and can I put something on there? Can I build something on there? And the answer would appear to be no. But that may be why, because you didn't do anything to the karka. You did something to everything on top of that. That may be why, in order for the karka to become asura, as opposed to the tree, you must dig the pit, l'shem avodizara. Okay. Anyway, so that's one example of something which ordinarily does not become asur because it's karka olam, but if you have, in this case, you have an exception if you have tfisas yad ha'adam. Now here comes to what I think to be the most interesting and perhaps the most common question that comes up, which is the following. Ki asur of Shmuel bar Yehuda, on the end of the second wide line in the Gemara, of the medium lines, Ki asa Rav Shmuel bar Yehuda amar Rabbi Yochanan, af al pi she'amru hamishtacha vele balei chayim lo asaran. Even though we say that if you bow down to an animal, you can't make it asur b'hana, asa'on chalifin la'avodas kohavin, asaran. So this is an action, by the way, which does not entail avodah zarah. You're not actually worshiping avodah zarah. But supposing I take this animal, and I swap it. A guy has, he has this beautiful gold cross, and I want that gold cross, and let's say it's been worshipped, it's worshipped, and I give him an animal in exchange. Or, let's say I have the cross, and he gives me the animal. The animal now becomes Aser. Chalifei Avodah Zarah. In other words, when I exchange money for Avodah Zarah, the money, it's a little like a pidyon, which doesn't work. The Avodah Zarah remains Avodah Zarah, but the money takes on the quality of the Avodah Zarah itself. Okay. So, now...
What's transferred? I mean, what is it, the work, the value?
The negative kedusha, if you want to call it, transfers when you do as an exchange. It's a pidyon that doesn't work. Now you'll ask me, but if it doesn't work, why does the money become asr hanah? So the answer is sometimes a pidyon that doesn't work, a redemption that doesn't work, the original object, of course, retains its original status, whether it's kedusha or tuma, doesn't matter. And yet, the new object takes on those properties. Let me give you the classic example in the Torah. Temura. Now, what is a temura? So temura, the Torah says in Parshas Bechukosai, lo yachlifenu v'lo yamiro so tov bira urabitov. Right? You're not allowed to swap out. You have a carbon, you can't try to switch it with something else. Lo yamiro so, you can't do an exchange, tov bira rabitov. It doesn't matter what your intent is. Good for bad, bad for good. V'im homer yimirenu. And if you try doing a temura, v'hayahu usmura so yeh kodesh. And one pasta, two is very similar psukim. One has lo yigael at the end. Both, the original animal retains its full kedusha, and the second one gets kedusha as well, in the case of a karban. What do you do with an animal that's a temura if it got a kedusha? Well, it depends. If it's a karban chatas, you have to lock it up and let it starve to death. If it's a karban asham, you can't bring it as an asham, but you let it graze until it gets a mum, and then you redeem it, and then the money is used for whatever it's used for. If it's a temura of an ola or a shlamim, you bring it as an ola or a shlamim. Okay, so here you have a case of, you know, of a fail, right? You tried doing a pidyon, it didn't work, but nonetheless, even though the original animal is a karban still, the second animal also gets kedusha. In other words, it's a half pidyon, the exact half that for sure you didn't want. Okay, now, however, is the animal you swapped in, does it have the same status as the original animal? The answer is no, it doesn't. It doesn't, and one of the ways you know that it doesn't is that a temura cannot make a temura. In other words, if I have animal A, and I say I want to put B in exchange for A, A remains with its original full kedusha, B becomes a temura. If I now take B and I say I want to swap C in for B, it just doesn't work. Okay, so you have a wonderful example which will serve as a paradigm for our discussion of something with kedusha when you do a pidyon, that the pidyon doesn't work, and yet the kedusha transfers to the object that you tried to swap in for it. And yeah, you have an example of a case where they transfer, the pidyon doesn't work with the temura on a temura, and nothing happens, everything stays the way it was. And of course, sometimes you have a pidyon that works. If I have an animal that has a mum, and now it only has effectively kedushas damim, I can redeem it. I give money to the gizbar, I give an object to the gizbar in exchange for the animal, the object gets kedushas damim, the animal becomes mine to use in many cases however I see fit.
So what is the level of B?
What?
And you gave... You're trying to do temura for A. So B, what is its status?
It has a kedusha, I would call it a kedusha kalusha. It has a slightly weakened kedusha, strong enough that it's brought as a carbon in the case of an overla shlamim, weak enough that it doesn't have the power sort of to transfer over.
And also, it doesn't get, you can't do it again.
Well, that's the point, it won't transfer over to the next one. So the Gemara says that by Avodah Zarah, the Chalipin are Asurin. So if I have my Avodah Zarah, and I try transferring its Tumah onto something else, I buy something with it in exchange for it, the original Avodah Zarah remains Avodah Zarah, and the money becomes Asur B'Hanah as well. Now the Gemara says the following. Ki Asa Ravin, Amarth, on the fourth medium-wide lines, Ki asa Ravin Amar pligubo Rabbi Yishmo Rabbi Yosef Rabbanon. There was a debate between Rabbi Yishmo Rabbi Yosef and Rabbanon. Chad Amar Chalifin Asurin Chalifei Chalifin Mutarin Chad Amar Afilu Chalifei Chalifin Nami Asurin. So here this goes like a Temura case. It was a machlokes. Let's say I now have the object that I tried swapping in for the Avodah Zarah, and I try swapping something out for that. So it's clear from the Gemara that object remains Asur for sure. In other words, the original and its Temura. The question is, can the Temura make a Temura? And that's a machlokes ha-tanai. Machlokes Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Yosei, and the Rabbanon. Okay. So now the Gemara says, "My taimo demanda Omar, Khalife Khalifin Asurin." How do you know? What's the source that Khalife Khalifin Asurin? So the Gemara says, "Omar kra vehoyiso chayrem kamohu." The Torah says, "Velo saviso evan el beisecha." And talking about Abu Dazar in the beginning of Parshas Ekev, you shall not bring an abomination into your house, lest you become chayrem like it. V'hayisa chayrem kamohu. So the understanding is kol sha'ata mehayom imenu. Anything that you make out of it, v'hayisa, will be harehu kamohu. It will be asur b'hana. So if you use the Abu Dazar to get apples, the apples become asur b'hana, and anything that comes out of the apples becomes asur b'hana, etc., etc. That's one opinion. The second opinion is Amar kra who velo chalife chalifin. The end of the pasuk is again velo saviso evel besecha vayisa cherim kamohu shaket to shaketzenu v'saev to savenu. You shall make it sheketz and a toiva, an abomination. You should treat it like that. Ki cherim who? So they say who velo chalife chalifin. In other words, you have to balance between, on the one hand, v'hoyisa cherem kamohu, something that you generate with the Avodah Zarah, you buy with the Avodah Zarah, you exchange, becomes cherem. On the other hand, who, but v'lo chalifim? So the answer is chalifin or surin, chalifin or mutarin.
This, again, I don't know if Hedyot ever gets involved here.
At this stage, in this discussion, it's Lehedyot. This is not Legavo anymore. Starting with Chafar Baroshich v'maros, nothing to do with Hekdesh anymore. I'm only using, to the extent that I've quoted Hekdesh, it's just to give you sort of a conceptual analog of pidyon and failed pidyon. So now, the Gemara says, V'idach, okay, so what is the other guy, the guy who wants to say that even Chalife, Chalifin are Surin, because of a Hayisa Cherim Kamo, anything that you make out of it, anything that will be because of the Avodah Zarah is Asur, what does he do with the Mi'ut of who? Ki Cherim, who? Who is Cherim? But something else is not. So the first one opinion said, you know what else is not chayrem? Chalifei chalifin. But if you believe that chalifei chalifin of Avodah Zarah is asur, so what is excluded? What is not tofes damav? What doesn't grab its pidyon and make the pidyon asur also? So the Gemara says, hahumi boile lima'ute arla v'kiloi hakerem. To exclude arla kiloi hakerem, and it's probably true for almost all Yisurei Hanah outside of Avodah Zarah, she'im mecharan v'kidesh b'dneihem mekudeshes. If you sell the orla. Orla is the fruits that grow in the first 3 years of the tree. Kiloya kerem is when you plant the way Rabbi Yoshia says two species of grain, two different species of grain which are kilayim, and then you plant them with a grape seed. That's called kiloya kerem. It's aser b'hanah min hatorah. You're not allowed to plant it, and you're not allowed to get hanah from it if it grows. So what happens if I want to be mekadesh and isha? The only problem is that all I have is orla or kiloya kerem. So I go to 47th Street, I go to the diamond merchant and say, maybe they sell regular rings too, not the diamond ring, sorry. I go to the jeweler and I want to buy a gold wedding band and I say, look, I don't have any cash, but I have got great apple pie. It's delicious, okay? It's made from apples of Arla. So he's happy, he doesn't care. Now, it could be a guy, it could be a Jew, whatever it is, and I give him the apple pie, the Arla apple pie, and he gives me a ring. So the question is the ring asur b'hana? So the answer is no. In mecharan v'kidesh b'dmehem, the Ritva says it's an issur d'oraisa to sell orla kila kerem. The issur of hana is not only to get hana from the physical properties of it, but even to sell it. But if you sold it, the money is not asur b'hana. Rashi says only b'dieved you're allowed to use it. The Ritva disagrees. He says l'chatchila, it's asur to sell it. Once you sold it orla kila kerem, the money is completely mutar. But either way, certainly midaraisa, the money is mutar. So that's what that opinion will say. He'll say, ki cherem hu, Avodah Zarah is cherem, and it's toface everything. Chalifin, chalifei chalifin, but arla and kalaya kerem, and other yisur hana, hu cherem, but not arla and kalaya kerem. In other words, their demehem are mutar. So now the Gemara says, v'idach, arla, so doesn't he need who to exclude from it arla and kalaya kerem, that they're not toface demehem? So v'idach orla kileya kerem lo tzricha mi'uta. He says you don't need a pasuk to tell you that isurei hana as a general rule are that demehem are mutarim. It's assumed that any isur hana, if you sell it, the money is mutar. Why? The havilu avodas kochavim ushvias shnei ksuva babaim ke'echad. because there are two places the Torah tells you that something is tofes damav. And the fact that the Torah has to tell you it twice indicates that those are the exceptions, not the rule. Right? In other words, generally speaking, when Chazal darshan things, we make what's called a binyan av, and we make it mikasav echad. I have a certain principle that applies by X, and once the Torah tells me that the principle applies by X, I can say that other things that are conceptually similar to X, I can learn through a binyan av. To give a very simple example, it's midrabanan anyway, but the Gemara in the beginning of 6th Perek in Brachos tries to establish that you have to make a bracha when you drink wine. So the Gemara wants to say that we'll make a binyan av. Just as wine is a food that you get hana from, and the Torah says you make a bracha, so too, any food that you get hana from, the Torah says you make a bracha. Now, sometimes a binyan av fails. A binyan av fails because someone will say, but wine is unique. Maybe wine you make a bracha on because of X, Y, and Z. But other things that don't have qualities X, Y, and Z, you don't make a bracha on. So then sometimes the Gemara will quote a different case. They'll say, the Torah says you have to make a bracha on shemen. All right? And just the shemen is a food and you get hana from it, so too, any food that you get hana from. So then the Gemara will say, but shemen has A, B, and C that are special about it. So then what the Gemara will often say, yes, but wine, yayin, doesn't have A, B, and C. It only has X, Y, and Z. So you see, that's called the binyan av mishnei ksuvim. You say that the unique features of wine are not the unique features of oil, and the unique features of oil are not the unique features of wine, but the common denominators, they're both foods that you get hana from, and Torah says you make a bracha, so too all foods you get hana from, you're supposed to make a bracha. That's how a binyan av works. So when there's a problem, when there's something unique about the source that you're learning from, we ask Akash and say, maybe that's unique, that's called a pircha. And often when then the Gemara will quote another source, and sometimes they'll have to put them together to glue them together, and that's called a binyan av mishnei ksuvim. I know most people don't say karbanos, but if you say Rabbi Yishmael, Rabbi that's what a binyan av mishnei ksuvim is. Now, if one pasuk was enough to teach you, let's say yayin, there were nothing unique about yayin, and the Torah says you make a bracha, so we would have learned from yayin alone. And then if we had a pasuk by shemen also, the Gemara would say, stop. What we know now is that yayin and shemen are the exceptions to the rule, not the rule. Why? Because if yayin were meant to be the paradigm for everything, for all food, the Torah would not have told you it by shemen. It's an unnecessary pasuk. So when you have shnei suvim, haba'im ke'echad, meaning each one would have sufficed, or one of them would have sufficed in its own right, and yet the Torah repeats the din, even though I could have made a binyan av from one, now you know that that is the exception and not the rule. Now the Gemara will actually say, as you'll see in a moment, it's a Gemara in Kiddushin actually, it's referred to all over Shas, as Tu Man Da Amrim. Everybody agrees that Shlosha Ksuvim Baim Kechat Ein Melamdim. You cannot learn a principle from them, they're obviously the exceptions. There's a machlokes where the Shnei Ksuvim Baim Kechat Melamdim or Ein Melamdim. With your two psukim, maybe we could just say one pasuk wasn't necessary, but nonetheless, you can still make a binyan out. But that's a machlokes. Shnei Ksuvim Habayim Ke'echad, meaning each one would have been sufficient to teach us the principle, but the Torah repeats it, so you have it twice now, cannot serve as a binyan av for everywhere else, or do you say, by definition, it tells you everywhere else is the exact opposite? So, for the moment now, what the Gemara said to explain the Shita, that Chalipe Chalipin are mutarim by Avodah Zarah, why? Because he says, Ki Cheirem Hu. Hu Cheirem, and not Chalipe Chalipin of Avodah Zarah. But the Gemara asks, you need Hu to teach you Hu a Cheirem, and not the Damim of Arla and Kalei Akerem. So he says, no, I don't need a pasuk for them. You know why? Because I have two cases where the Torah tells me that something is Tofes Damav. Shvius and Avodah Zarah. We're about to explore Shvius. And therefore, he says the following. If, in fact, there were a general principle that any Isser Hanar, anything that has Kedusha, is Tofes, it's Damim, then I wouldn't need two Psukim. I could have either had the Pasuk by Avodah Zarah, or I could have the Pasuk by Shvius. The fact that the Torah tells it to me in two places, Shnei Ksuvim Abayim Ke'echad Ein Melamdim, those are the exceptions, and everything else, the assumption is, unless you have an explicit Pasuk, everything else, the Damim of something that's Aser Bahana, does not become Aser Bahana. So that's what the Gemara says. Ve'idach orla v'kalaya kerem lo tzriche mi'uta da'havi lo avodas kochav v'mushvias shnei ksuvim abayim ke'echad v'chol shnei ksuvim abayim ke'echad ein melamdin. Avodas kochavim ha'damaran v'ha'yisa cherem kamo. That's how we know that the chalipin are like the avodah zarah. U'shvias d'chsiv Ki Yovel hi Kodesh Tielachem, and Yovel and Shvius had the same din. Yovel and Shmita had the same Kedusha to the Peros. And we're talking about Peros Shvius here. So ma kodesh tofes es damav asur, af shvius tofes es damav asur. Peros that have kedusha shvius. If you sell them, the money gets kedusha shvius as well. So now the Gemara says, but I ma kodesh tofes es dama v'yotze l'chulin, af shvius tofes es dama v'yotze l'chulin. So if you're going to use hektesh as the model for shvius, ki yovel hi kodesh t'yelachem, so when I take an object that's kodesh, it's a donkey that belongs to hektesh, and I give cash for the donkey, I'm poded, the money becomes kadosh, but the donkey becomes chulin. So would you say that if I'm poed that, we know, the answer is it's not. That's why the Gemara is asking. If I have paper apples of Shvius, and you give me money for them, would we say the money becomes Kadosh B'Kedusha Shvius, but the peros are Yotzei L'chulin and have no Kedusha Shvius? The answer is no. So that's what the Gemara says. Ima Kodesh Tofes Estama V'Yotzei L'chulin. You would think, Af Shvius Tofes Estameha, but V'Yotzei L'chulin. But the peros become Chulin. Talma Lomar, Tihiyeh. Bahvayasa Tehei. Now it's Kodesh Tihel Lachem. The peros always remain with their original kedusha. Ha ketzat. So how does this work? So this is theoretically halacha lemaisa in Eretz Yisrael in the Shemitah years. Lakach peros beperos shvius basar. I buy with my apples that have kedusha shvius that grew on the Shemitah year from the ground in Eretz Yisrael. I buy meat. So what happens? Elu ve'elu misbarim the shvius. Both of them have kedusha shvius, and when something that's called the shas habir comes in shvius, I can no longer eat the peros or shvius. I have to get rid of the meat. I have to get rid of the apples. Lakach bebasar dagim. But if I go ahead now and I decide, you know what, I don't want to get fleshik, so instead I exchange my meat for fish. So then the din is yotza basar nichnasu dagim. The basar loses its kedusha shvius, and the dagim get the kedusha shvius. Bedogim yayin. I now decide I want to go vegetarian. So I take the fish and I exchange them for wine. Yatsu dogim nichnas yayin. Now I decide I don't want to get drunk at all. I don't want alcohol. I'm really turning ascetic here. So beyayin shemen. I decide to buy olive oil. Yatsa yayin v'nichnas shemen. Then the shemen has kedusha shvius and the yayin doesn't. So really, what's the rule? Haketzad. Achron nispas b'shvius upri atzmo aser. In other words, the last thing that I buy in the exchange has the kedusha shvius. And there are two kedusha shviuses here. These the original pairs have kedusha shvius that never disappears. But the derivative of that, and this is a little like tamura, but not exactly like tamura, that which gets kedusha in the exchange, that kedusha will always exist on something, right? But it can be moved from one object to the other.
Or something.
What's that?
It's your something.
Well, look, you can eat peros shvius, remember, until the shas habir, until the time that comes that you have to get rid of it, once it's no longer available wild, you know, in the field for the wild animals. Up until that point, you can eat it, but you have to eat it with kedusha shvius. And then at that point, you can't eat it anymore. So the point is, we can keep exchanging the kedusha shvius from one object onto the other. And it's only the last thing in the chain that has it, plus the original peros always remain with
it's
their kedusha.
Nothing to do with it being yours?
No, it's nothing to do with yours. It could go to another person. Yeah. Marshall.
I don't understand. I think it's nothing like Tamura, and they don't explain why. In other words, the whole point of Tamura is that the transitive property or the transfer is no longer affected after one degree of separation. This is the exact opposite.
No. So it isn't. What this has in common with Tamura, I said it's not the same thing as Tamura, but it's very similar. Let me see the similarity. There's an Ur Kedusha, and there's a derivative Kedusha. The way it works by Tamura is the original animal's Kedusha is in full force. You can make another Tamura off of that.
That's analogous. That's
correct. And then, here's what I would say. The second animal, the Tamura, has a Kedusha Kalusha, a weakened Kedusha. The way it manifests itself by Tamura is that you can't even transfer it to another thing. It just remains as. The way it manifests itself by Shvius is that Kedusha is dissolvable. In other words, it always remains. That's all I meant.
I understand that. What I'm saying is, I don't understand the justification. In other words, by Tamura, you say, the minute you get one degree of separation, it, whatever it is, the lower level is there and can never be shaken.
All right, so let me
belief, and you're saying,
okay, so I'll explain why I think that is. Shvius is very easy to explain. Because Shvius, the way it works is that the first object has Kedushas Haguf, if you want to call it that. That's what grew in the Shemitah field. That never leaves. The second one has Kedushas Damim only. Right? It's not real Peir Shvius. It's derivative. That we call Kedushas Damim. Kedushas Damim by Hekdesh can be exchanged. And Shvius follows that pattern.
Okay, so you're saying Tamura ultimately is a higher level of a lower level.
It's a lower level of a higher level kedusha. In other words, it's still kedushas haguf. The proof is that you bring it as a karban by the ola and the shlamim, but it cannot transfer. Right? It's not strong enough to be tofei something else, but you can never get rid of it either. So I think, but the analogy in my mind is primarily to the fact that you can have kedushas of full strength, you know, that are retained, plus some type of derivative which doesn't behave like the original Kedusha in different ways between Temura and Shvias.
Quasi Kedusha.
But the answer really is that there are three different levels, basically.
Okay.
Temura is a higher one. Cool. It's not
in the same way that you have the original animal, you have Temura, and then you have the thing which is Kedusha, Dhammim of Hektesh. Yeah. So, right. Okay.
But here.
Yes.
The last one,
the last object in the chain has the Kedusha Dhammim, and the original has the Kedusha Saguf. Okay, so that's why, since we have two psukim, one for Shemitah, that's Tofes Esdamav, Shemias, and one for Avodah Zarah, Shnei Ksum Abayim Ke'echad Ein Melamdin. And then the Gemara says, what about the other Madamar? Ve'idach Kasavar, Shnei Ksum Abayim Ke'echad Melamdin. No, that Tana holds, that Tana would say that Shnei Ksum Abayim Ke'echad are still Melamdin, and therefore, Ve'itzdrichu Lema'utinu. I would have thought that Orla and Kalea Kerem are also Tofes Demehem. That's why I need the Pasuk Kicherem Hu to exclude Orla and Kalea Kerem, but Chalipe, Chalipe, and Avodah Zarah remain Aser. Okay. Any questions? Okay. So God willing, next week.